This is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. You know how ants work together to accomplish a task that no single ant could do alone? Well, scientists at CU Boulder are taking inspiration from that, building a swarm of small robots designed to work together like industrious insects. For example, they may someday send a bunch of small and expensive robots into space to assemble a telescope. Research team leader Dustin Reiches is here with us and brought a few members of his robot swarm with him. Dustin, thank you for being with us.
It's great to be here.
You've set these robots up in our studio and metal flooring that they're going to operate on?
Yeah, they get power through the floor, through their legs.
Okay, so this is basically the size of a mosaic tile, but it's metal and it'll conduct the electricity?
Yep.
Describe what these robots look like and how they work.
Well, they look a lot like ping pong balls. They're spherical, they're white.
Do they have names?
They're called the droplets. And they're called the droplets because we can get a bucket of them and then pour them out onto the floor. And they are self-righting. So they'll all roll around until they land on their feet. Then they get power once they're on their feet. And then they can start doing whatever it is they've been programmed to do.
So they right themselves up.
Yeah.
Do you know what they're going to do in this case?
I don't. I just grabbed a bunch of them from the lab on the way here, and they're all programmed to do different things.
The one you just put on the metal tile is just doing this kind of shuffle.
Yeah, it's walking.
We'll post photos of these to cpr.org so you can follow along. Why would you want to have, Dustin, a swarm of robots, little ones, as opposed to, say, one big robot that does something?
Well, you can imagine if there's an earthquake and a building collapses, you have a bunch of these robots that are really small, really cheap. They can go into the little nooks and crannies in the building. They can all fan out and explore the entire building at once. And if there's a fire or if it's unstable or something and it collapses and you crush a couple dozen of these robots, it's not a huge loss. They're designed to be cheap, and so you can build a whole lot of them.
And of course, this is a scenario in which you want to cover a lot of ground.
Yeah.
More ground and more quickly than a single robot.
Yeah, and some of them can stay behind and act as communications relays, and so some of them can go deep in the structure, and others are providing a path for communication.
So they're talking to each other?
Yeah, they talk to each other.
Are they coordinating? In other words, if you have one robot covering a certain patch of land, you don't want the second robot to cover the same territory.
Exactly. That's what we're doing, is designing the algorithms and the programs so that they can communicate, they can space themselves out, they can do their distributed sensing. So each one can see a little bit of something, and then they can put all of that information together.
Each one can see. So they would be equipped with a camera?
They have light sensors, red, green, blue light sensors. So you can think of it as a camera that is one pixel. They can each see one pixel.
But I'm thinking, Dustin, in the aftermath, for instance, of an earthquake, there's a lot of debris around. So you're going to need something that is more nimble than scooting across a little tile.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. In that specific application, we would have to redesign the legs or the actuators to get a better range of motion.
Where else could these be used, hypothetically?
In our lab, we are developing ones that float. So they can go out and find an oil spill and kind of surround an oil spill or find the boundaries of the oil spill.
Wow. You would put on detectors, oil detectors, I guess.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. We're starting work on ones that fly.
What could they do besides fly?
the same sorts of things. They can explore a space. They can fly over a forest fire to figure out where the boundaries of a forest fire are.
And the point is that you have a bunch of small robots that are cheap. What do you mean cheap in comparison to, say, investing in one big one, you know?
So if you have one big robot that can walk, that can be hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Okay.
Or millions of dollars, depending on what you want it to do.
Okay.
There are other people who have developed swarm robots before that are several hundred dollars. These, when we ramp up manufacturing, these should be about $20 to $30 each.
Wow. That would revolutionize, in a way, the market, it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. So that makes it possible for researchers to get hundreds or thousands of them relatively easily.
I'm anthropomorphizing robots here, but do they
anthropomorphize these all the time?
You do? Okay.
Yes.
How so?
Oh, I refer to them as he and it. there are some of them that have different personalities. They have exactly the same hardware, exactly the same software, but for some reason, some of them have different personalities, and so sometimes they don't act properly, and you'll have to put them in timeout.
Now, different personalities, isn't that just a nice way of saying there was something wrong in their manufacturing?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
They just have slightly different behavior. Not necessarily wrong behavior. It's not like there's parts that don't work, but maybe their clock runs a little bit faster than everyone else's clock. Huh. Or their sensors are calibrated a little bit differently. So what they see as red, other people might see as more of an orange or something like that.
And sometimes you have to sideline them.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to put them in timeout because
they're not working well with each other.
They don't work well with each other. And so you actually have to take them off the floor to power them down. There's no on-off switch. You have to take them off the floor and put them somewhere out of the way.
Now, that sounds like a cute problem if this is a toy, but if this is something serious and you've got a number of them that are misbehaving, as you put it, that can be a problem in an emergency.
Not necessarily, because you have 100 of them trying to solve a task. And so if 10 of them are misbehaving, it's not a big deal. The other, 90 of them are going to complete the task. And
this is part of the reason you want to have so many and you want them to be so cheap.
Yeah. And the algorithms that we design are tolerant to those sorts of failures. If some of them stop working or if some of them are behaving badly.
You're listening to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner. And joining us from CU Boulder is Dustin Reiches. And he is talking to us about swarm robotics, tiny robots that work en masse. There could be hundreds of them to gather data. And that could be in a disaster scene. It could be in all kinds of scenarios. How the heck do you test these? I mean, some of the environments that you're talking about are really complicated.
So we have an environment in the lab that's this metal floor.
Yeah.
And we have a projector mounted to the ceiling. We can project virtual environments down on them. So if we have like some sort of maze that we want them to explore, if they see red light, that means there's a wall nearby and they can't go that direction.
I see. So you overlay that maze on your flooring.
Yes.
And it becomes an obstacle course.
It becomes an obstacle course. Of course, we can also put down physical obstacles, but we have these virtual environments that we can project down, and it's really easy to make a whole bunch of different environments for them.
How long before, in the wake of a disaster, we're seeing swarm robots?
To get to the stage where we have hundreds or thousands of robots exploring some disaster situation, that's probably 5 years away, 5 or 10 years away.
What are the biggest obstacles between here and there?
Power. One of the reasons these guys have a powered floor is because in a lot of the other systems, you have batteries that you have to stop and recharge, so you can't run long experiments.
Right. Batteries have a short life, and they're heavy, aren't they?
Yeah, they're heavy, and they're
expensive.
Batteries are heavy, but they're expensive. They die really quickly, and getting 1,000 robots all to a recharging station or somewhere where they can recharge their batteries takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. Hmm. So with these, they can run forever on their powered floor.
Question is how to bring that to the real world.
That's yes, exactly. Yeah. You asked about the biggest problems.
Yeah,
that's one of the big problems. Locomotion. These guys obviously can walk across smooth surfaces, but they can't walk across very rough surfaces. So getting wheels or legs or actuators that are cheap enough and small enough is a problem. And people are working on these problems.
What excites you most about swarm robotics, Dustin?
The thing that excites me most about swarm robotics is the ability not to do computations on the robot itself. So it's not the robot that's doing the thinking. It is the entire swarm that's thinking. Each robot knows a little piece of information, and then they communicate with one another. And the knowledge that the robots get comes out of this swarm interaction. They become more than the sum of their parts.
Thank you so much for bringing these guys by.
You're welcome.
CU Boulder's Dustin Reiches is part of a team developing a swarm of small robots that work together. See what they look like at cpr.org.